the hard-to-hear but powerfully important poem by Warsan Shire, a British Somali poet. And the poem is entitled simply Home, and I have excerpted it and left out some of the most difficult sections to read. I encourage you to read the full poem. It's easily found online, and I find it just some of the most moving verse that I've read in a long time. Home by Warsan Shire. No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Your neighbors running faster than you. The boy you went to school with, who kissed you dizzy behind the old tin factory, is holding a gun bigger than his body. You only leave home when home won't let you stay. No one would leave home unless home chased you. Fire under feet, hot blood in your belly. It's not something you ever thought about doing, and so when you did, you carried the anthem under your breath, waiting until the airport toilet to tear up the passport and swallow each mouthful of paper, making it clear that you would not be going back. You have to understand that no one puts their children in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. Who would choose to spend days and nights in the stomach of a truck unless the miles traveled meant something more than journey? I want to go home, but home is the mouth of a shark. Home is the barrel of the gun. And no one would leave home unless home chased you to the shore, unless home tells you, leave what you could not behind, even if it was human. No one leaves home until home is a damp voice in your ear saying, leave. Run now. I don't know what I've become. Dignity for all. I am not easily or often outraged. I am not prone to hyperbole. And yet, the recent ways that those migrants or refugees trying to enter the U.S. and, yes, even Canada have been characterized has led me to outrage. To describe those fleeing the mouth of a shark as dangerous, as rapists, as violent, when they have left dangerous and untenable and deplorable conditions that most of us cannot even fathom. What have we come to? Are we so threatened by people seeking a better life and work and shelter and food for themselves and their children that we must invent lies about them? Perhaps we simply don't understand what it's like for home to be the mouth of a shark. Perhaps we don't understand what it's like to live in the stomach of a truck, to board a boat with your children seeking a life that you think might be better. Perhaps we ourselves feel so uncertain about the future of our human community that we have sought answers in blame. Whatever the reason, it is shameful, and there is no excuse. The sheer numbers are staggering. The stories of struggle and loss and fear even more so. There are now 68 million people who are refugees in the world. More than 25 million refugees worldwide who are awaiting for resettlement, including but not limited to people fleeing war in Syria, starvation in Yemen, and religious persecution in Myanmar, just to name a few. Those people who are awaiting resettlement are disproportionately people of color, and some of them are people fleeing the 72 countries that persecute lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning folks. The situations and conditions from which these people are trying to escape is incomprehensible for those of us who have never had to flee our homeland. The reasons for leaving are many, and the risks are great. How many people, you may wonder, have died trying to get to safety? Well, in Europe, the most recent death toll of those trying to reach Europe across the Mediterranean and by other means since 1993, the most recent number they've been able to come up with is 34,361. But as a Guardian article that I found this week said and wrote on World Refugee Day, and I quote, "This list only details refugees whose deaths have been reported. The toll is almost certainly far higher than 34,361. As international media coverage of the refugee crisis has taught us, many more deaths go undocumented. Migrants are lost at sea or die in the backs of trucks. They are killed in perilous conditions in camps or by far-right hate groups, or the extreme stress of their situation leads them to take their own lives." End quote. In 2018 alone, the United Nations Refugee Agency reported that 2,262 people lost their lives attempting to reach Europe in the Mediterranean Sea. Can you imagine what the conditions must be like at home to place yourself in that much risk? Can you imagine boarding a boat with the sincere but uncertain hope that somewhere else must be better than this? We, with the luxury of not facing a home that is like the mouth of a shark, can think of this month's theme of journey in metaphorical terms. We can consider our life paths, think about what we have done as individuals. We can think about journey and think of it in wonderful and sort of flowery terms. Where have I been, both literally and figuratively? Who have I known, and how have I changed, and what has remained constant, and what choices and decisions have I made along the way that I feel good about or regret? But the migrants that we consider and uplift today have faced and undertaken a very different kind of journey. They have decided to do what they can to trade in an uncertain and threatened present for a possible, livable future. They have risked everything, including their lives. In essence, they have said, "I will go in search of a better life because what is here is so bad, or I will die trying." It is not the metaphorical journey of 1,000 miles or the journey to greater awareness. It is the life and death journey driven by necessity. If I stay, I die or live a horrible existence. If I go, I may die trying to get to that new land, but the possibility of this other place, it could be, it might be better. The part of the Warsan Shire poem that I simply couldn't bring myself to read to you this morning is about what happens after the refugee arrives in the new land. Part of what she writes about is the fact that there is no fanfare, there is no red carpet welcome awaiting these people once they have made this treacherous journey. Too often, instead, as the poem reminds us, mistrust and fear, discrimination, and sometimes even horrible conditions in the new land comes. Sometimes, as has happened in heartbreaking fashion and continues to this day, families are separated from their children. Surely you've seen the pictures. Ugh, oh, makes me so angry. Another heart-wrenching journey only awaits once these folks make it to the new land, a journey toward acceptance and understanding, a journey toward being seen as whole and real people. So what does all of this mean? How do we help? How do we understand our world and the place of each person in it? How do we see the dignity that we say in our faith tradition is inherent, not earned, inherent in each and every person on this earth, regardless of their circumstances, of their country of origin, of the color of their skin, of the amount of money they have? Dignity is inherent. It seems to me that we will need to become better border crossers ourselves. We will have to learn how to extend ourselves beyond the borders of our tidy lives. We will have to learn cultural humility, not just competence. We will have to do the continuous work of unlearning any racism and any classism and any ism that we have learned through a lifetime of being told that the life that we have is the way it should be. Each time we see or encounter someone from another culture, especially a migrant, we have a chance to honor their journey and their dignity. I don't know about you, but each time lately that I have found myself crossing a border, every time I hand my passport to that official to look it over, every time I think about my own credentials, I think a little bit more about what I'm bringing with me, what baggage, so to speak, I'm carrying into this other person's land. And I try to check any attitudes I might have about what is better or worse, what is rich or what is poor. I try to check all those at the border too. And I try to look for humanity. Where are the places of pride? What am I being invited to see that is uniquely beautiful about this place and these people? What is the history of this land? And how are today's struggles a remnant of past colonialism or slavery or mistreatment or exploitation? The story is seldom simple. And we need to seek compassion and understanding for each individual person and their story as much as we possibly can. As I think about wrapping up what I'm saying this morning, I'm realizing how depressing this all is. That it's really hard to think about how many people struggle so much in our world, and how our images of so many of them have become unfair stereotypes and caricatures, not real people. And so I thought, how can I end on a positive note? How can I say that all is not lost? And I remembered a story that I lift up to myself occasionally when I need to be reminded that there is still some hope beyond stereotypes. And I came back again to this story, which I will share part of with you to close. Palestinian-American poet Naomi Shihab Nye writes about an experience she had in an airport. She wrote this about 10 years ago, 2007, 2008, and it's entitled simply Gate A4. Gate A4. This is just part of her story. Wandering around the Albuquerque airport terminal after learning that my flight had been delayed for 4 hours, I heard an announcement. If anyone in this vicinity of Gate A4 understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate A4 was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian embroidered dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing. "Help," said the flight agent. "Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late, and she did this." Naomi Shihab Nye stoops down and speaks to this woman in halting Arabic and figures out that the woman thought that the flight had been canceled entirely, and she needed to be in El Paso the next day for major medical treatment. I said, "No, we're fine. We'll get there. Just later. Who is picking you up? Let's call him." Naomi Shihab Nye goes on to say that she calls the woman's son and that she speaks to him. And then Naomi Shihab Nye calls her own father and has the woman speak to him for a while in Arabic and calls every Palestinian poet friend of hers and puts the woman on the phone with them. And 2 hours pass with this woman speaking on the phone to all of these people in her own language. She was laughing a lot by then, Naomi Shihab Nye says, telling of her life, patting my knee, answering questions. She had pulled a sack of homemade mamoul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts from her bag, and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There is no better cookie. And then the airline broke out the free apple juice from huge coolers, and 2 little girls from our flight ran around serving it, and they were covered with powdered sugar too. And I noticed my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country tradition. Always carry a plant. Always stay rooted to somewhere. And I looked around that gate of late and weary ones, and I thought, this is the world I want to live in. The shared world. Not a single person in that gate, once the crying and confusion stopped, seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women too. This can still happen anywhere. not everything is lost. Friends, this is the world I want to live in. Not a world where we tell people that migrants waiting at borders are rapists and dangerous and violent, but a world that is the shared world. A world where we have sacraments of powdered sugared cookies. This can still happen anywhere. Let us make it so. Blessed be. And amen. Let us join now in singing our closing hymn, Rising in Body and Spirit, to sing Our World is One World in your gray hymnal. Did you notice that in the second verse of that hymn you just sang, we were reminded that it matters what we think, it matters how we see other people around us in our world, that with our attitudes we can build a bridge or a wall. There is too much talk about walls these days, is there not? Can I get an amen? Oh, those walls. And the walls come tumbling down. And the walls come tumbling down when we look within and we say, I want to share my life. I want a shared world that is not just about me or you, but is about us. I want a world where everyone is at home and no one's home is the mouth of a shark. And the way that I can begin to be a part of that shared world is by sharing of myself. By looking at my own attitudes, looking at the ways in which I make assumptions every day about people all the time that build a wall. Friends, it's long past time to tear that wall down, to build a bridge of love and hope to your neighbors, in Syria, your neighbors in Yemen, your neighbors wherever they come from. May we be bridge builders. May we be border crossers. May we be lovers of all people. So may it be now and always. Amen.